This is still What's Up Lagos. I'm Mary Anacol. Now, I did say on the other side of the clock that we were going to be speaking about the economics of Nigeria's debt profile and, of course, the issue of our over-dependence on oil. Yes. Now, we know that, crude is Nigeria's mainstay and that's where we get the most of our monies. But that's not devoid of the fact that we have other untapped aspects of our economy. And that's why I said earlier on that I'm not an authority in this area. And that's why we have our guest who's joining us via Zoom this morning. He's going to be talking to us on this issue. Our guest is an economist and a very good friend of this house. Gospel Obele is the chief economist at Streetonomics Limited. Gospel, it's so good to have you join us. Good morning.
Hi, Marian. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. So now, I just finished having a conversation about how many children Nigerians should be having or thinking of having now that, you know, the situation of things look a little bleak. That's the best way I can put it. But let's start by talking about, you know, our over-dependence on oil. Why do you think that we have not just depended, but overly depended on oil, knowing that the rest of the world is moving to green energy and other, you know, sources of energy, but we're still stuck in, you know, the crude oil phase?
I mean, thank you so much for having me. It's really great to speak with you again on Nigeria Info. Yeah, so two major things come to mind. First off is the fact that the Nigerian economy is already diversified. We can see that oil contributes about barely 7% to the Nigerian GDP, and the non-oil sector contributes about 93% to the Nigerian GDP, meaning that the non-oil sector contributes more to economic activities than the oil sector. So the Nigerian economy is already very, 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 very diversified. The challenge we have, however, is having a productive, emphasis on the word, a productive, diversified revenue base. You know, it's two different elements, a productive revenue, a diversified revenue base. And that's to say that the 6% that contributes to economic activities contributes 85% to the revenue stream. You know, which sounds like a misnomer or it's abnormal actually. Mm-hmm. You'd expect that the 93% that contributes to the GDP economic activities from the non-oil space should contribute more, right, to the revenue block. However, we find out that the oil sector contributes more. But then again, like you asked, why do we have this case when other countries are sort of like advancing in the conversation? And what one of the major highlights is this. I mean, we have what we call the extractive institutions. Extractive institutions simply mean that from the military era, when the government ruled by decree, you know, by control, and they stuck to only what they know and probably were not open to new things. When we evolved into democracy, we technically retained the culture, the extractive institutional elements, the self-interest elements, the greed elements, and all of those things that keep countries at the status quo. We technically kept this culture, even if our constitution changed, even if our, in quote, ideologies changed to democratic government, we still operated an extractive government for a critical few, which means that when you run an economy or manage an economy from an extractive institutional standpoint, there is really no openness to change, flexibility, innovation. You know, what you find is shown where the economy empowers a critical few who would do everything and everything possible to retain their institutional power, you know, by securing more economic resources and economic access. And when economic resources and access are hijacked by a critical few, there's little or no room for innovation. There's little or no room for genuine growth. There's little or no room for you know, expansion or even to change the current set of things. So let me give you an example. For instance, in the first quarter 2021, being the fact that 93% of the Nigerian economy or activities in Nigeria are driven by non-oil, we realized that the non-oil sector contributed double, almost triple the revenue numbers from the oil revenue.
Really?
You know, yes, I mean, about almost 600 to 900 billion, or almost a trillion thereabouts, whilst the oil sector contributed less than 300 billion, you know, in context. And that's to show that with the natural order of things, in spite of government, in spite of extractive institutions, we have situation where the revenue position has improved due to the non-oil sector performance and contribution to economic activity. But you now realize that the emphasis, the strategic focus for FX has been via the oil sector. And being a strong consumption and import-driven economy, also find a situation where we sort of like import this thing. So your FX conversation is also tilted one way because there's a supply conversation, all right, and demand constantly increases. So one of the major reasons why these things may not change in any time soon is because the direct opposite of extracting resources are inclusive institutions. A lot of the countries you find now that are moving towards green energy and all the likes are largely inclusive. But then again, inclusive is relative, right? You can still have the economy powered for a few, but the engine rooms for innovation has been unlocked for a critical mass. So in any economy in the world, you know, the economy is still run by a critical few, but the ideology that guides the critical few is innovation and prosperity for the critical mass, at least on a level playing field, you know, technically. So when you have that, you have, you know, a lot of engine room for innovation, for flexibility, for changing policy, for refocusing and all of that. But in Nigeria, you don't have that. You know, the president still sits as a minister of petroleum and natural resources, and it's not done anywhere in the world. And that's to tell you where the political body language and the efforts are tilted. When you have a gold mine, literally, you know, you're sitting on a gold mine where 93% of your economy is powered by non-oil, and you're almost tripling that revenue on non-oil. But the focus, the political energy, economic resource, policy focus has been on the oil sector.
Let's talk more about this oil sector. Sometime last week, I had a man from the mining sector come on the show to talk about a cabal that runs the crude oil mining. Now he also talked about, because there's been this reaction about Tompolo running that surveillance for the pipelines, and the fact that there's a lot of oil theft. We don't still see these monies or the funds repatriated into the country, but then we're seeing a lot more of crude disappearing and not finding its way back, you know. Even though we send the crude out, refine it, still spend money to import it into the country. That's another kettle of fish on its own.
Spend more money, in fact, yeah.
But do you think that Nigeria's economy woes is a result of its centering all of its power and its energy in one sector? Do you think that that's what's responsible? Because every time the budget is drawn, or when we have conversation with government officials, they talk about different aspects like agriculture. We talk about it. We pay a lot of lip service to it. But then how grown has the agricultural sector been over the years? I mean, let's even bring it down from 1999 up till now. What's been the growth process? There are other industries. People will talk about the gold that we have and, you know, how it's being mined and how much of the funds finds its way back into the pockets of, you know, the federal coffers. Again, we have all kinds of untapped resources in different parts of this country that are yet to be, the surface is yet to be scratched. So again, can we put this problem solely at the feet of government, or can we say that even we, the people, are not asking the right questions?
Yeah, thank you very much for the question, Marianne. There are a cluster of different segments, you know, when it comes to how you think of these issues. But at the core is public leadership. At the core is public leadership. And, you know, for anyone in Nigeria saying cabal, cabal, there's cabal everywhere in the world. You know, in fact, in many other countries, there are more cabals than in Nigeria. There are cabals everywhere in the world. The only difference is that, you know, there's a level of cabal ideology that can be used to drive prosperity for a critical mass. And the ideology is, when you drive prosperity for a critical mass, the cabals get richer. But the ideology in Nigeria is the reverse. The cabals rather hold on to the resource or the innovation with fear that by the time they open it up, you know, they no longer have institutional control. But that's a different conversation. However, to answer your question, like I mentioned, Nigeria has not diversified its productive revenue base. You know, Nigeria doesn't have a diversified productive revenue base. And it takes a lot of intentionality to diversify to have a productive. Productive will mean that gold, coal, you know, and every of its natural resource can contribute in terms of not just having value-add products and services that can compete globally and regionally, you know, but can have a critical chunk of your buying market, as well as, you know, you have a value chain to return those monies back to the institutional authorities that need it the most, or whatever the case may be. The major conversation has been that the industrialization beat of the clock hasn't been done. So you have 23% agriculture represent 20% of the Nigerian economy, industrialization represents 19% of the Nigerian economy, services represents 57% of the Nigerian economy. However you want to look at it, those three sectors, which are the three main composition of the Nigerian economic sectoral landscape, right? Those three sectors have huge potential. Any of those three sectors have huge potential, but independently, they don't have the potential. So, for instance, in agriculture now, 90% of our activities in agriculture are still crop production based. So if you hear of startups in agriculture who are even trying to push for growth and development of economic activities in agriculture sector, which is what have made the sector grow, you still realize that a lot of those value propositions are still hinged around crop production. So agri-tech, for instance, you hear farmers agora, farmers tech. Why should it have to be farmers only? You know, the reason why you have farmers only is because you have 90% of economic activities in agriculture in crop production. And then you have very tiny in about 3% in fishery and all that. But agriculture is much more complex and much more encompassing. Now, to also state that, I mean, okay, let's assume you have 90% of crop production, really, and that's all what you can churn out of that are just raw materials, right? Where would those raw materials go to? To a large extent, we sell those raw materials and import the finished goods, right? But in an ideal economy, the raw material should feed the industry, which currently holds about 19% of the Nigerian economy. So assuming the economics of how these sectors work are really done right and the right investments are in place, your 90% crop production should feed into as raw materials for your industrialized sector or your industrial sector.
But do we even have that? I mean, when we talk about industrialization, because I mean, the last time I checked, I don't know if we still can say that we have anything industrialized per se.
We don't have anything industrialized. So industries are dead, and then you have a huge chunk of the agricultural sector on crop production. So technically, the core engine rooms to scale competitiveness, growth, and powering of your economy for prosperity are dead. Now, if you look at other economies in the world, they either have one or the other. Very few economies have both, and then now have services. So Nigeria has agriculture, industry, and services. Services are 57%. But right now, we don't even have a database on web developers in Nigeria. Do we know how many software developers we have in Nigeria? We don't even know. So the service sector, there is no industrial policy to harness the value of the service sector, especially when it comes to exporting and any foreign exchange. Everybody just doing their thing. But in the UK, for instance, you have the UK is tilted towards financial and professional services, and that's service sector only. The US is tilted towards a little bit of services, but a lot around production, a mix of everything. But then you now see countries like Vietnam and China who are trying to build an edge on industrialization or industrial sector development, as it were. So Apple goes to make its products in China and in Vietnam, and then they assemble into California. And that's how the world. So organizations are beginning to leverage the advantage or the competitive advantage of different nations when it comes to agriculture based or industrialized based or services based. But Nigeria has the three. Nigeria has the three, and yet we're where we are. So it's a lot more around public leadership and also some form of citizen agenda setting. The citizens are not aware, confident, or there are no intelligent advocacy structures to empower the citizenry enough to set up an agenda to hold government accountable to deliver. We don't have that. Everybody just ranting on the internet. You know, you have an NSAS, but you don't have an institutional pipeline to ensure that NSAS leads to critical reforms. So it doesn't make sense. No matter what you do, it still boils down to a lot around public leadership and citizen agenda setting.
And engagement. Now, you talked about the UK. Now, the UK, about 60 to 70% of its population is aging. And hence why they're bringing more people to service, you know, some of the industries that need to be serviced. But just like you said, Vietnam, China, even Nigeria, India, we have a huge percentage of young people who are mostly for that service industry. And you said that, maybe we're not engaging enough. But what, aside from us engaging government, what other roads can we explore? Because I'm just thinking to myself, if government in itself, and I don't want to believe that our governments don't know that we have this population and we can make the best of it. What about private individuals? I mean, there's this public-private partnerships or even just private partnerships with these young people to start up something. I mean, we've seen a few startups here and there, maybe a couple of them here in Lagos. But how can we also take advantage of the service that we have and start, you know, harnessing it, you know, for the Nigerian service industry, if I'm saying it right? Because, yeah. I mean, we have a lot of it here. Instead of people jackpotting every day, because we see that every other day, how about we sit, look inwards and look for other ways instead of waiting for government?
Yeah, there are many sides to this conversation. So what you've had over the time, over the years, has been that the government has paid lip service to the development of the people, the development of these sectors and the economy. So when you have, when startups try to do a few of these things, because the ideology of the public institutions are largely driven by extractives, like I mentioned earlier, you begin to find kickbacks. So for instance, the central bank banned and seized licenses of some fintech, and they also rolled out some policies that you realize that the body language has been a bit of trying to control and collaborate with startups. So you have one bit of institutions not evolving the ideology to become inclusive, because when you become inclusive, you say they need to collaborate and they can spark up new levels of innovation and all of that. And once you can spark up new level of innovation and policy reforms, your markets begin to develop, which takes me to the next question. No matter what Nigeria does right now at a PPP level, it may still be difficult to retain talent. Now, don't forget that these talents you're talking about are people who left university, they become quote-unquote endangered species of a failed system. And somehow they found their groove running, they learned a tech skill, they learned a business skill, they started, you know, they became entrepreneurs, they built something out of nothing in spite of government. Now, what happens is when you have a growing talent market, sorry, when you have a growing skills, when you have a growing number of your young population who are becoming skilled, mm-hmm. and your markets are not developing,
we have to go for a quick break. We have to go for a quick break. Unfortunately, I've just been timed. We have to go for a break. When we come back, we'll talk about how we can manage the skilled, population. We'll be right back. Gospel Obele is an economist, and we're talking about how we can deal with our economy.
What's up, Lagos? It's What's Up, Lagos, baby. Get set.
Yes, it's still What's Up Lagos, 31 minutes past the 11 o'clock hour. We're still talking about, of course, Nigeria's overdependence on oil and the fact that we are highly indebted and what we can do to maneuver our way out of this. Now, Gospel Obele is an economist and he's been talking to us about the problems and somewhat solutions. Now, we were talking before we went on the break about the how we can explore the very young and youthful population that we have in the services industry as opposed to what we have now. A lot of idle young people. I mean, the guys who are engaged in kidnapping, Boko Haram, ballot box snatching, all kinds of crimes and criminality. These are all young people. I don't see my father doing that. But then we see that our young people are idle. But why are we not using them for the right things, like every other country that has a youthful, growing population? Gospel.
Yeah, I mean, like I mentioned earlier, we've not actually put the right institutional elements to ensure that there's a response between people who are developing skills and the markets available to absorb those skills. Our markets are still immature. Our markets are still below infantry, in fact. You know, so for those who develop the right skills, you begin to find out that they don't have the markets to apply those skills, to grow in those skills, and to get the right reward. So they begin to look for other markets where the opportunities for those skills are available and can get good reward for it. So as a result, you begin to find a critical chunk of those who do not have skills at all, who are unemployable, consistent social needs. And so I think it calls heavily on the responsibility of all stakeholders. I mean, from government to family units to religious institutions, you know, to academic institutions, you know, to work together in ensuring that young people from the cradle, from when they're young, I mean, when at their infantry stages to like 10, 15, 20, you can plug them into a mainstream economy where they are learning the skills for the future. I mean, 70% of parents do not even know the kind of skills that their young adults children need to be commercially relevant in the place of work today. That's a big deal. So it's not just a government or failure of the education institution. Even the parents at home do not know what's expected in the world as we move on. So it has to be a lot of collaborative effort to ensure that kids or young adults are plugged into the mainstream of productivity early. So which is what brings me back to the productivity question. The Nigerian GDP growth may keep increasing. I don't really personally care about the GDP growth because the GDP growth tells you about the economic activity, but it doesn't say anything about productivity. Your economic activity can be on the high, and infrastructure can be bad. Economic activity can be on the high, inflation is on the high. Economic activity can be on the high, and quality of life, access to opportunities are also on the high. In fact, there are some youths and young people who have skills, but they can't access opportunities. So there are different roadblocks in the institutional process that we need to go back and revisit with a proper inclusion lens, because sometimes, you know, the part of the play card of extractive decision are to keep the people in penury, all right, reduce the access opportunities enough that you trigger the desperation for, you know, for a better life.
And you think do you think that that's what our leaders are doing in Nigeria with our people?
It's a strategy on the extraction bit. Extractive institutions do not believe in empowering people and creating market opportunities for that synchronage for economic productivity to happen. Because once economic productivity happens, people become more prosperous. Once people become more prosperous, people are empowered to demand more from government.
So you're saying
people have the resources, they can call the shots, they can call the bluff of government. So the goal is to not even get them to a point where they are prosperous or empowered or have a voice to do so.
So you're buttressing the point of those who say that poverty has continuously been weaponized against Nigerians. This is what you're agreeing to.
Yeah, so a lot of people may not agree with poverty as a word, but the institutional process of disempowering, this institutional process of hijacking opportunities, the institutional process of ensuring the education system does not work, are all driven to feed that, in quotes, using poverty as a weapon. So if you're not necessarily in poverty, the person may be fairly okay, but the frustration around, I can't get my career. For instance, now, a lot of young people, when they get to the place of work, after 3 years of their career, after 4 years, you begin to see a lot of dissatisfaction. Because there is a lot of organizations, private sector institutions, do not have a clear pathway for career growth and development. After 3 to 4 years of people, you know, getting into an industry, after 3 to 4 years, they can't really, either they change industry or they change location or they change something else has to happen a lot of times. So what I'm trying to say is that it's not just to those who don't have skills or have jobs. Even people who have skills and have jobs, there's a problem transitioning around career path. There's a problem around scaling people who have what it takes to contribute to your economy. So if somebody can contribute at 5% in your economy, do you have the institutional process to ensure that the person in the space of 5 to 6 years or 10 years contributes 40 to 50% to your economy in terms of productivity? We don't have that. So even outside those who don't have jobs, there are people who are locked in the career building process, who cannot navigate, who cannot advance, because the extractive natures of systems, of institutions rather, hijack the growth mechanism at critical points, hijack the educational institution, hijack career pathways through private institutions. So it's a collaborative effort, not just poverty as a weapon, but also institutions as, you know, the platform to trigger
drivers
and all of that.
All right, well, we want Lagos to be in part of this conversation. We want Lagos to come in on this conversation. My English is almost failing me. 0700-993-993-993. That's 0700-993-993-993. Join the conversation. But then I want to talk about our budgeting systems and, of course, the issue of our indebtedness. But Lagos, you can be part of the conversation. 0700-993-993-993. You want to comment, you want to ask questions for the ladies, 01465-7190. You can tweet at Nigeria Info Lagos on Twitter. Don't forget that you can use the hashtag WhatsApp Lagos. We have a post up there where I think we are also live on Facebook. So go to Facebook, search for Nigeria Info 99.3, and we are live also on YouTube. Be part of the conversation. Now, Gospel, quickly before I go to take the calls, I know that. I understand that Nigeria's budgeting cycle, we write our budgets, prepare it in hopes that we will get some oil revenue to a certain extent. But half the time, we don't get that much revenue. And also, the budget in itself, is half of the things that are in the budgets, we never really ever get to cover it. So again, why do we write these budgets in hopes as opposed to the reality on ground? Again, I also realized at some point that we also write budgets hoping for monies or grants that will come from, you know, the international space. And I'm wondering why should we as a country be operating that way?
Thank you, Marianne. I mean, that's a very poor planning culture. That's a very poor planning problem, and it's a culture. It's a culture, you know, within our system, within our context. We are poor planners, even in private sector, poor planners, family level poor planners, you know, so we're grossly very poor at planning. Then we're also driven by hope and not some form of realistic strategic ways to move from point A to point B. You know, so it's a general cultural problem, not a federal government issue. However, on the budgetary streams, even the monies that they receive, you know, technically, your budgets are only as effective as the institutional pipelines you use to execute them.
Mm.
So, I mean, previously people would say, oh, 70%, 30% recurrent to capital ratio. That conversation exists. But even the monies you have available, what MDAs, who are the civil servants, the people who are approving for the monies, you know, where are the monies passing through to deliver policy projects to start with? You know, a team is only as strong as its weakest link, you know, quite honestly. So, so first you have a design issue around the budget. Second, you have a policy issue because the budget is a financial issue. It's an instrument used to fund policy programs, which makes it one of the most powerful tools. So your policy design is ineffective, plus your budgetary process in terms of design and administration is also ineffective because of institutions you use to drive them. So it's a clog and cluster of ineffective streams. What can we do differently? Very simple. But is it that simple? It's to change the culture. It's to change the culture. So,
I mean, how do we change the culture? Because, you know,
how do we change the culture? So, to change the culture, you need to change the ideology or the beliefs or the engine rooms that drives the culture in the first place.
Hmm.
You know, so so if you notice this conversation, we'll be moving from hard elements to soft elements.
Hmm.
The way Nigeria is evolving, you know, you cannot change it without changing the cultural or institutional elements that feed into this lack of productivity we find. Budgets are not productive. That's the summary of the question you asked me. Mm. So we need to change the culture. Change the culture, change the structure. So in 2023, the onus, I mean, it's now for Nigerians to head to the polls to ensure that they pick a leader that they believe, you know, can effectively institutionalize a culture, a process that would empower productivity and prosperity for all. The budget is only one out of many things, you know.
Okay.
Ensure that the right projects are allocated funds, ensure that there is a proper, you know, accountability around it, ensure that we are realistic in our planning and all of those things, and we focus heavily on the development of a non-oil sector. So all of this within the context of an inclusive public leadership will make the country work again.
All right. I see that someone's trying to get your attention on the phone, but the phone lines are open here. 0700-993-993-993. That's 0700-993-993-993. If you're a young person, and like he said, the service industry is, in fact, underexplored. We have not even scratched the surface. Our budgets, are written in hopes that we would make some money or somebody will come and dash us money. Of course, we're also talking about industrialization. When I was a young girl, my state in itself used to have the paper industry. So we used to do, there was a company that, you know, did the exercise books. We had the match company where matches was made. We had that same company where toothpicks were made. I remember the one that produced exercise books were called Okuiboku at the time. And then, of course, we had the match industry. I went there on an excursion when I was in kindergarten. I still remember it vividly. But where did all of those things go today in Nigeria? And yet we are looking at growing. How do we grow if we do not address this issue? 0700-993-993-993. That's 0700-993-993-993. And you can join the conversation. We are live on Facebook, facebook.com/Nigeria Info 99.3, or you can be part of the conversation on our YouTube. Please, you can drop your comments. And on Twitter, Nigeria Info, use the hashtag WhatsUpLagos. Let's go to the phone lines and take your thoughts and your comments. Don't forget, we're keeping it at 60 seconds, all right? Hello, good morning. What's up, Lagos?
Yeah, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. What's up, Lagos?
Yeah. This is Barrister Peter Oko calling from Kenya.
Go ahead.
Yes. On this issue of budgeting, Hello?
We're listening.
Yes, on this issue of budgeting, the problem we have in Nigeria is that we don't have the discipline to implement the budget as planned. The government only makes sure that they implement the expenditure that fits them, like the salary, the bogus salary of the National Assembly and that of the ministers. But when it comes to infrastructural development, they make sure that they neglect it. So at the end of the day, the budget does not meet the purpose for which it was planned. Education, for instance, they make the budget, but when it comes to education, they don't implement it fully. So our problem is misplaced priority on the part of those that implement the budget. That's my take on that.
Thank you very much for calling. Now, Gospel, it's almost the same thing that you said. He's even saying that, the priorities are misplaced as opposed to what we should be getting. But then there are those who are also saying that, like you said, the activities, in the GDP, activities are high, even though inflation is high. Why are we not seeing that? I mean, people still complaining about how much money they have to spend as opposed to what they spent 5 months ago. People are complaining about the fact that their salaries have not increased, but the cost of living has increased. And they're trying to make sense of it all. Again, going forward, like you said, we need to get the right people in place, the right people in office to lead us. But there's also a systemic problem that, whether you change governors, you change ministers, then you have the civil servants, you have the people who have always been there running the system. How about that?
Yeah, that's what I say. I was always referring to institutions. Institutions will mean the NDA machinery, and in the NDAs are the places. The NDAs are the places where you find a lot of civil servants and different civil service related structure that aren't healthy enough for reform. So it has to be comprehensive internal housekeeping, and it's going to take a very, 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 a very aggressive leader who has capacity and the courage, to engage the necessary housekeeping. Because a lot of times, even when you change government, the civil service structure still remains. So you have a secretary who has working there for 30 years, and it's still a paper folder system, and it's just very difficult getting things running. So, it talks about a lot around the civil service reforms and the need to reform and clean up the civil service. So it's going to take a lot of comprehensive public leadership structure to get that done. A confident one at that. And, to be honest with you, Nigeria cannot work again without compromise. Some people will need to compromise on certain things to ensure that the country works. A lot of the economists we mentioned today that works. I mean, if it's just that we're not privy to the level or the weight of compromise that are being done on a daily basis, to keep the country at par. So you don't have the truth is that in public service, in public leadership, there are no right or wrong. There is no white and black. A lot of times it's around, you're dealing with gray, you're dealing on the middle lines, you're dealing on the sidelines, you're dealing on the lines of interest than on the lines of what is right or what is wrong.
Okay.
So it's a very complicated space to be,
All right. Well, we're still taking your thoughts. 0700-993-993-993. Now, quickly, before we go back to the phone lines, I wanted to ask you a question because you're an economist. Maybe you'd help us. Why is the oil, crude oil price falling in Nigeria when everybody's demanding for crude? I mean, because of the war in Ukraine, and of course, you see Russia at some points, you know, turned off the gas because they said they were trying to fix something. But then people are looking elsewhere. Why aren't we, you know, selling? Why are we not on the up and up as opposed to what's happening right now?
In terms of why crude oil prices falling in Nigeria?
Yes. We're not getting as much money as we should when everybody else is trying to get, crude oil.
Exactly. So, technically what we do, what would have been, an advantage for us would have been to process through our refineries, the crude oil we produce. But, you know, when you sell the crude oil, you know, and then you try to buy back in finished product with FX, especially in the context of global inflation and all that, it's much more difficult. And when you do the, if you do the financials, you realize that you're losing a lot of money in the process. So, you know, in number one, you're importing inflation, and number two, you're losing money, losing revenue, and losing other monies across the value chain, you know, just trying to do the exchange of raw materials and finished goods coming back to your country. So it's again, to speak around the competitiveness of the country. And if our refineries were working, you know, we would have gone past this conversation a long time ago.
And but the question is, why are they not working? Because trillions of naira is being pumped into these refineries to service them. But then they're not working. Why are we servicing refineries that are not working or producing anything for us?
Yeah. So that's why I said earlier in the call that extractive institutions will always expand leakage points to constantly be in control. That's how it works, you know. And a lot of the average Nigerian may not be able to take in what I just said, you know, but it's the truth. It's how the world works. So let me ask you another question. Why do you have a lot of illegal refineries being opened on a daily basis? And those ones are working. And those ones are delivering. You know, there are a lot of illegal refineries.
Artisanal refineries, yes.
Yeah, there are a lot of illegal refineries that are delivering good value and even selling products to a lot of the properly formal, you know, properly structured brands in oil and gas industry. You know, but the core conventional formal refineries, the one that's been approved by government, are not working. And a lot of money is spent there, you know, to maintain them. So it's just, you know, institutions thrive on expanding leakages. Once leakages are expanded, they are richer. And the people or the institution or the country is made less productive. What's the way forward? The way forward is not necessarily to close down illegal refineries, because you can't fight it. So you heard about government trying to close down illegal refineries. Sometimes they even hide the numbers for the people to feel that you are working. But the truth is that you have a lot of illegal refineries, you know, starting every day. And people are, you know, and they are highly risky refineries and all of that. So what's the context? The context would be to strike a deal, right? I mean, like I mentioned, the world is no longer revolving around right or wrong, you know, or what's working or what's not working. The world now revolves around interest. The illegal refineries are run by Nigerians, and they're also run like by institutions as well, whom the governments are aware. They have data. So the convention is to strike the deal, all right? Why not make these illegal refineries legal or semi-legal refineries, all right? And strike a deal where you have a cut where...
But does that not mean that if we say let this illegal refineries become semi-legal, then that means that we're putting a dead sentence on the real refineries there?
You're not putting a dead sentence to... I mean, you have that working on one end. I was going to come to that. Then you fix the refineries, because the problem is the extractive institutions would want to cripple what's work or what should work, so that they can, you know, have other mainstream illegal standpoints to make more money. So once you strike a deal along the lines of interest, you have an incentive to create other things that's working. And at the end of the day, what you have is a comprehensive competitive market.
Okay.
You know, take for instance also, if you fix only the legal refineries or the refineries the government have produced, you know, it's still not enough to meet production. So you still have more illegal refineries opening up. Secondly, the current structure of the oil and gas industry needs a lot of healthy competition to thrive. Dangote alone cannot solve it. Legal refineries alone cannot solve it. So the idea is, it's just like saying, why do you have a lot of fake Gucci's or fake Microsoft equipment outside? The more fake you have outside, the more likelihood that people are aware of the brand, and they will one day want to buy the original.
Okay. We have a message quickly because I think time is really running fast.
A couple of messages, but just this one. This one says, there's no government in Nigeria. That's why refineries are not working. Everything is upside down.
There's a government in Nigeria.
There is a government.
There's a government in Nigeria, and the government is aware and why the refineries are not working. I am saying the refineries are not working because the extractive institutions intentionally put the leakage on the run. And a lot of these people are also the ones financing the illegal refineries as well. So it's not there is no government. For people need to understand, it's not black and white. It's not a principle conversation. It's an interest conversation. Until Nigerians begin to understand that the world is built on compromise, but then healthy compromises, we will not find a way forward.
Well, I want to say thank you, Gospel. We have to go. Time is not on our side. We've been talking about the reduction in Nigeria's overdependence on oil revenue and our debt profile. Unfortunately, we're not able to cover everything. It's a very big conversation. Gospel is the chief economist at Streetsnomics Limited, and he's been speaking to us all morning. Thank you so much for being here and being part of the conversation.
Thank you for having me.
All right.
Your time.
Thank you. Well, that's the conversation for today. We want to thank you all for being part of it. Unfortunately, we're unable to take all of your calls and your messages, but we hope that you were educated enough for the next conversation when we have it. My name is Mary Anacon. I want to thank you all for being part of the conversation today from 10 till now. Follow me on Instagram and Twitter at MIMIEYO, Mary Ann Dikokon, everywhere else. Love you, Lagos. See you tomorrow. Goodbye.
They say she who asks questions cannot lose her way. So answer this for me. Why spend money to send money? Why buy airtime without a discount? Why pay fees to receive cash from abroad? Why can't you stream and shop globally with your card? And yes, Chipa is available on App Store and Play Store. Why haven't you downloaded it yet? Chipa. Move your money freely.
Football's biggest season is here, and DStv is the stadium with all the action. Enjoy every single match from the FIFA World Cup, the Premier League, La Liga, Serie A, the UEFA Europa League, and the UEFA Champions League. That's all the stars from around the world in every competition that matters. Get DStv HD decoder, dish plus 1 month compact subscription now for 12,000 Naira only. And be part of sport's biggest stadium only on DStv. T's and C's apply.
Magic. It's a nourishing fruit drink enriched with vitamin C and glucose that keeps him active. Enjoy the magic of good life.
The number one talk station of Lagos.
Join the conversation online or on the go.
Follow us on Twitter at Nigeria Info FM.
And Instagram at Nigeria Info FM Lagos.
And watch us live on Facebook and YouTube. Be part of the Info family.
Log on to nigeriainfo.fm on our mobile app and website.
99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
99.3 Nigeria Info.
Your number one station for talk. Let's talk. On 99.3 Nigeria Info. The conversation.
The conversation.
Never stops.
The state government asked that schools should not resume till January because of COVID-19. Now,
Nigerians don't know that there are people who are called the liberals at the very bottom of their country.
Educating and informing.
So let me tell you something. It's not possible to block all the million subscribers. If they buy another 80, that's for them to learn.
Listen to Nigeria Info 99.3. Let's talk.
Depend on us for the best of talk.
I was caught in during my university days. The day I finished the initiation process, they were like, now today your trouble starts. And through, that's when your trouble starts.
How do you pull a trigger in a compound? No policeman that I know anywhere in the developed world will take a shot in that kind of place.
99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk. The voice note on 99.3 Nigeria Info. Let's talk.
Good day. I am Dr. Igwe Kun, the General Secretary of the Association of Resident Doctors National Orthopedic Ibobi Lagos Chapter. I am also a senior resident in the Faculty of Orthopedics. COVID-19 is a worldwide scourge that is hitting us real hard and remains highly contagious. As a health worker, I do my best to stay safe for myself, my family, my patients, and the public. We are in the front lines in this fight and hence have a huge responsibility to the public despite several challenges we face. I encourage every health worker out there to stay motivated in this fight until it is won, and above all, pay attention to safe practices. To the public, let's desist from spreading unverified information that will lead to panic. We should instead reach out and encourage one another over our social media platforms. Also, use this time to reflect and rest for the times ahead, because there will be times ahead and we'll win this fight. State, there will be times ahead and we'll win this fight. State.